The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
And welcome back to another award-winning Kiefer and Curry show here on the TKR app. Those three little letters, TKR, 100,000 folks are going to join you every single week. The show airs at least five times a week. And of course, we'll be your favorite podcast. It's called the Kiefer and Curry show right here on the TKR app. He is Kip Kiefer. I'm Tony Curry. And every single week, we get together and we talk about all kinds of things. We've talked about rock and roll music and our relationships with our families and our boys. And we've talked about different atmospheres and environments for some of our favorite sporting events. Of course, we're doing this show now on the Tuesday after the national championship game. We'll start right there real quick since it is so fresh. Your thoughts on the national championship game? Michigan has won their first national title since 1997, Kip.
Michigan reminds me a lot of George Foreman in his prime, Tony. Before he was making grills, he was pounding guys into submission in the ring until Ali rope-a-doped him. Michigan got rope-a-doped a couple of years in a row, but Michigan is just a behemoth with big players that are athletic enough to play in a lot of different styles. Pardon me for that interruption.
Sure.
And, you know, basically, I think the bottom line is that they just were bigger, more physical, and imposed their will on a Washington team that was pretty much used up last week, expending a tremendous effort to knock out Texas. But they had a lot of key players hurt, and they didn't play with the sharpness they played the week before. Congratulations to Michigan and Jim Harbaugh. That's hard for me to say because I think it's pretty clear that I'm not a Big Ten fan and really don't like the plodding kind of old school style of football that's played in that league. But Michigan deserved this title. I'm kind of sad that Alabama did not have their best showing because I think they had the pieces to beat Michigan, just didn't get it done. So we've got to endure a lot of I told you so from a group and an area of the country who has been taking a lot of humiliating defeats lately. But the Wolverines reign supreme.
And we were talking off air before we actually started this particular podcast here in the Kiefer and Curry show. But is Jim Harbaugh, and obviously, you know, I've got extended family who went to Ohio State, so they hate Michigan. They never liked Michigan before Jim Harbaugh got there. They certainly hate him now, and his fortunes have turned quite a bit, despite the fact that he was having a difficult time knocking off the Buckeyes there the first few years he was at Michigan. But his style of coaching, we were talking about to off air, just how different it is and how friendly he is and how fun and how aloof he is. Remember when we first came in, he was talking about how much he loved to have steak and drink his big glass of milk every night. And that's cute when you're winning 10 or 11 games a year. Then when you're going 0-4, 0-5 against Ohio State, it's not funny anymore. Next thing you know, you're asking for $1 million contract extension. They actually could take $1 million off just so you can stay at your alma mater. That may play into it as well. But somehow he got it done. And I got to give him kudos for it, whether you like his coaching style, whether you like him at all. The other thing is, he wasn't there for six games this year. What does that say about what happened this year at Michigan?
Well, I think you have to add the footnote, though. That last suspension was kind of ridiculous because he was allowed to coach the entire week. He just couldn't be on the sidelines for the game. So he wasn't totally suspended. He got his teams prepared. But your point is well taken. Six games, he was on the sidelines for shenanigans that were against the rules. And it already has come to my attention that the current athletic director, who was also on the college football playoff committee, his last name is Howell. I forgot his first name. But he and Harbaugh have had a falling out a long time ago. They're not even on speaking terms, which is an interesting dynamic. Maybe on your great show with UAB athletic director, you can ask him, has he ever been in a relationship professionally as AD where he didn't speak to his head coach? Mm-hmm. Seems like an interesting question. So I'm wondering if, despite Harbaugh's success, all of the bad publicity and attention that's been cast on Michigan because of his continuing desire to tweak and bend and challenge establishments and rules and regulations, does not really ingratiate him in terms of, you know, in normally Tony, he would be in position to demand a huge deal,
sure,
as a reward for what he's accomplished here. But on the other side of the fence, and I know this kind of amazes you, it seems like there are several NFL teams lining up to back in a Brinks truck of money to sweep him back into the NFL. So it's going to be really, really interesting this week to see what the fallout is. Is Michigan going to say, Jim, you were right all along, you're our man, you've put us back in the promised land? Or if they, are they going to sit passively and say, yeah, LA Chargers, take him. He got us a championship. He was worth the investment, but we're tired of his foolishness. So I don't really know how it's going to go, but there's definitely a market now, as quirky as he is, for Jim Harbaugh.
I think, and I can only speak for the fan bases that I've been part of, I think fan bases traditionally like a hard ass coach. And I think they dig that a lot. The swarky, strange, quirkiness, say of the Miami Dolphins head coach, when you're winning, it's cute. It's fun. I think Harbaugh had that the first time he was with the 49ers. I think he had it there for a while with the Michigan Wolverines. And it wasn't fun anymore when you couldn't knock off your cross state rival in the Ohio State Buckeyes. And now all of a sudden it's quirky again. And I just wonder, as a fan base, and currently, I believe there are six teams in the National Football League looking for head coaches, including, of course, the Commanders. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. Ron Rivera, after 4 years, another guy just bounces around. He'll have another job next year, and he'll probably be successful somewhere for two or three years, and he'll bounce around. We'll talk about that in just a second. But I just wonder, as a fan base, if you're a Washington Commanders fan, do you want Jim Harbaugh as your head coach? Do you like that style of coaching at that level, at coaching level in high school and certainly in college? I think it's different. I think it was really different for Dabo Swinney, a guy that professed his faith on sidelines and talked about how much he loved his football players. He get fired up. But he's a rah-rah guy. But when you put him next to, say, a person, even like a Harbaugh or a Nick Saban, it's just so refreshingly different. I'm not saying it's better. It's refreshingly different. Do you think that the NFL fan base likes that type of coaching?
Well, I think the NFL fan base likes anybody who's able to consistently deliver results. And no matter what your personal style is, whether you're a hard ass or a tactician or whatever your specialty is, I think, Tony, in this day and age, with this generation of players, we are a long way from Bear Bryant at Texas A&M in his first year, taking his team out to the plains of Texas in 120 degree heat, having two-a-days, and having guys literally dropping like flies because he wanted to find out who really wanted to play football there. They would have jailed him in this day and age. So it's a whole different dynamic. The players are what they are now. They're in business along with the coaches. I think really the key now, no matter what your personality type, is being highly organized, being committed to your particular program and the leadership of managing people and building a culture of winning and expectations. And I think the best example of that is what I still consider to be, by far, all respect to Michigan, who's now the champion, but, and they have some aspects that are going to resemble what I'm about to say, but Alabama and Georgia are the two premier programs in college football. I don't think that's disputable, and I think the best evidence you can look to support that position is last year Alabama left out of the playoffs. They had two losses. They got passed over for a TCU team that didn't turn out to be very deserving, but when Alabama went to the Sugar Bowl to play Kansas State in a, quote, meaningless game, Bryce Young and Will Anderson both suited up and played for Alabama, despite their future in a couple of weeks being the first and third overall draft picks in the NFL draft. This year, you saw Kirby Smart in Georgia, number one all season, beaten by 3 points by Alabama, dropping from first to sixth in the college football playoff standings, which, again, if it was the best four teams, Georgia and Alabama should have both been in that tournament, and that would have made some tough decisions with some of the other teams. But the bottom line is Georgia goes to the Orange Bowl. They had seven players this week declare for the NFL draft. Tony, each and every one of those kids suited up and played in that game. So that is a tremendous testament to the culture and the brotherhood and the organizations that the CEOs of those programs, Nick Saban and Kirby Smart, have built. And you can look at the flip side of that. Florida State left out of the playoffs, had 20 players opt out of the Orange Bowl, including nine starters. So that was half of their starting players, which tells me that that is more of a mercenary program where they got a bunch of guys in the transfer portal, paid them money, and when there was nothing left on the line, they just jumped off the ship like it was on fire, and they were a pack of rats. So I nothing against Mike Norvell, but he's clearly not built the kind of stability and organization. It's just like politics. It's just like business. It's about leadership, it's about structure, and it's about building a winning and cohesive and solid culture.
You know, you bring up a great point, too. Culture is everything, and you talk about, and I go back to when the Sharon Moore situation, when he's crying on the sidelines of the Michigan game, and I'm like, please stop with the drama already. What is your problem? Are you serious? I mean, what kind of love fest do we have?
We beat up Penn State.
What in the hell was that? And obviously, we're missing out on the love train, man. We're missing out on the OJs here, because that must have been real, and now we're seeing
that. Yeah.
We have to remember, too, that Michigan was only one of two teams, not just in the Big Ten, but in all of college football, only one of two teams, Northwestern, the other one, to not have one player enter the transfer portal this year.
Yep.
What does that tell you about a program that, first of all, could possibly have suspensions? You got your coach, who, of course, is suspended for six games. And by the way, three of those games by your own institution. It was self-inflicted. Yes. So let's remember that Michigan, they knew something was going on. But to have that type of love affair going on and then to bring it to submission, bring it all the way to a national title. By the way, I was looking up some numbers, and I think it's interesting because obviously money's going to be playing a lot into this. $500,000 is what Jim Harbaugh got for Michigan winning the Big Ten East Division, $1 million for winning the league championship, an additional $500,000 for winning the CFP. He got a cool check for $1 million again last night after winning the national championship. That pushed him over $11 million for his pay incentives on a base of $7.1 million for Michigan this year. So he made out pretty well.
Yeah, I take that.
Yeah.
I guess, Tony, you just emphasized the point I was making. It doesn't matter how you do it, what your methodology is, what your personality characteristics are. At the top, as the leader, you build that kind of culture, and you just highlighted it. Michigan certainly had that kind of cohesiveness and solidarity to do what they ultimately accomplished. And, you know, as much as it would pain a lot of people to say it, grudgingly, Jim Harbaugh gets the credit for that because he's the man at the top. The buck stops there, and he got it done, and certainly had the support and the devotion of his players behind him. And I think at any level of football now, that is the absolute essential to success.
It really is. We're going to talk about all about coaching. And again, six particular teams, the National Football League. We talk about colleges as well, looking for lots of coaches as the coaching carousel continues to spin here. And of course, really, I wanted to kind of get into this after you did a great need to know here on TKR yesterday, talking about Bill Belichick. And you know, it's amazing to me. When you've got a coach, obviously, that could be looked upon as the greatest coach, not only in NFL history, but in all of sports history. He's only got a couple more seasons, assuming that he'd win 8 or 9 ball games, to surpassing Don Shula as the most winningest coach in all of the National Football League, 7 world titles. It's just amazing to see what he's done. And of course, you can certainly make the argument that a lot of that had to do with Tom Brady. Tom Brady did it without him. A lot of people say that he's got a little bit of a legacy to chip away, and that he should be able to coach coach a world championship team without Tom Brady so he could get his last yuhas or a little yahas before it's all said and done. But your thoughts on, and again, we have to understand this is a business. It's a little bit of a head scratcher for me to understand that any team in the National Football League would give up or should give up anything they've got, particularly if they got all the other pieces in place. They're just looking for a head coach. When you got Bill, when you got a Kraft sitting there with already the, one of the winningest coaches of all time, and he'd be willing to let him go because of a business decision. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I guess. You know, Belichick in the last 2 years, the Patriots haven't just been bad. They've been horrible. This edition of the Patriots had games where, you know, they really had trouble scoring at all. So a lot of the personnel decisions, and Belichick is 100% the man in charge there. You can't blame this on the GM or the player personnel people, because Bill Belichick is that department for the New England Patriots. So whatever's gone wrong has gone catastrophically wrong. And retaining him just based on the history, which, you know, a lot of people would have to give consideration to, you are in the absolute dumpster right now. And I don't know that Bill Belichick has ever been in that position to turn that around as everything continues to evolve. So from a business standpoint, I can see that Kraft, you know, says we got to go a different direction. Bill Belichick's been the greatest of all time. He will be lauded here. Brady's already been back for a couple of bows and honors in Patriot land, despite leaving and going and getting another one in Tampa Bay. I think Bill Belichick will always be treated on that level. But there are franchises that look at Bill Belichick and say, you know, maybe he could come in. And I had a memory from my childhood, Tony, that in the late 60s, Vince Lombardi won his second consecutive Super Bowl. The first two, as a matter of fact. They played, of course, the Chiefs and the Raiders and beat both of them. And shockingly, Vince Lombardi announced that he was stepping down as coach of the Green Bay Packers. Mm-hmm. And the reason was he wanted a challenge. He had won two in a row. He had been dominating the league. And he took on a challenge in the 1969 season. Vince Lombardi showed up in Washington, D.C. and coached the bedraggled Redskins, who hadn't had a winning season in like 15 years, and came in there with his organization and his leadership and took a franchise in 1 year that had finished with only three wins the year before. They were they were 3-11 on the season before, and they ended up being I think 7-6-1 that year. Had a winning season. Of course, you still had tie. If it was a tie back then, Tony, for our younger listeners, it was a tie.
It was a tie. Yes, it was. Yeah.
There was no overtime. Mm. There was no method to break the tie. So 7-6-1, and then of course he contracted cancer in the offseason. Never coached again and didn't live long enough to take the Redskins any further. But I think a lot of people know that history and know that a great coach, just the specter of him on the sideline and a guy that's given any talent at all. Right now, the Atlanta Falcons are very interested in Belichick, hopefully maybe coming to Atlanta. There's Washington, the Commanders, trying to catch lightning in a bottle historically again. They think they have some pieces. I think the Falcons have more. But just the specter of having one of the greatest coaches in NFL history and kind of the jolt of excitement and enthusiasm that might give players is probably worth a shot. I don't know.
Wouldn't it have to be a situation though that because Bill Belichick doesn't seem like the kind of cat that's going to come into a Carolina into a building process.
No, I don't think so.
He's going to want to come into a situation, and I guess he can write his own check there and say, listen, I'm going to again. A lot of people are saying he'll be a great fit for an organization that's got all the pieces but a head coach. I don't know too many National Football League teams that have everything
we know of.
I don't know too many teams that have it. Everything but the head coach. You normally have a little bit of that. And we'll talk about the Commanders here in a second, because a lot of people believe that they're kind of on the outside looking in. They kind of did this the wrong way, the backwards way. But I don't foresee Bill Belichick going into an organization. It would almost have to be a Sean Payton situation where the table's kind of set. You may do some tweaking kind of things, but you're going to, sow what you reap based on just some small character changes during an offseason.
Yeah, the Commanders are an interesting dynamic because they've got a brand new owner. They've finally gotten Daniel Snyder out of there, who was as bad a disaster as an owner as ever in professional sports history. The team has fallen on really, really hard times. It's an interesting question if that's going to work, but there really aren't any other examples, as you so accurately point out, where somebody's just in a position where they've got the pieces. I agree with you. You're not going to see Belichick go to some program that's scraping the bottom of the barrel. He's already at one of those. So I think at 73 years, 74 years old, this is the last hurrah for Belichick. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how all that plays out. But I can see the marketability. The new owner of the Commanders owns the Philadelphia 76ers and the New York Islanders in the NBA and NHL, respectively. This guy's got more money than the Middle East, and he's intent on winning. So the firing of Ron Rivera, which maybe not deserved because he just didn't have any pieces and was operating under that shaky foundation the first 3 years of his tenure. But this owner wants to go his own way, and he's got to be thinking he wants to bring somebody in with a huge name that's going to make a big splash. And amazingly, I don't think you can have two guys much different than Harbaugh and Belichick, but in the big splash category, that's probably the two that you would be looking at.
Ron Rivera, another one of those guys. He won a Super Bowl as a player, obviously not as a coach. He's just got that look. He's got that Teddy Bruschi look. He just looks like a badass. He's a really good-looking guy. I swear, I thought he was in his 70s. He's only 62 years of age. He's been with Philadelphia, Chicago, San Diego, Carolina, Washington. He's been brought into these organizations that, quite frankly, did need a lot of help and a lot of leadership skills. And obviously, after 4 years, it didn't get done at Washington. So this guy's bebopped around the league a million times. He's certainly not a Hall of Fame coach by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't have any doubt that he'll be able to pretty much pick and choose and go wherever he coaches next year. Am I wrong for that? And why do people feel that way about a person like Ron Rivera?
I don't know. Again, I think this circumstance, he had to have a spectacular year with not a very impressive roster. I mean, when you go with a rookie quarterback basically out of North Carolina as your guy, there's going to be some growing pains. They dumped their two best players halfway through the season because they were going to command such big contracts, both defensive end Sweat and former number one draft pick Young out of Ohio State. Move both of those guys, so they weaken their defense. I mean, Rivera really was at the helm of a ship in transition. I don't think this is personal reflection on his coaching ability as much as a business decision. You mentioned he looks kind of beaten down a little bit. He survived a real nasty bout with cancer and apparently has beaten that. So that'll make you look a little bit older, I'm sure.
Sure.
And also he's been in some bad situations from a coaching standpoint, which wears on you too. It would be poetic justice if Ron Rivera lands somewhere with some degree of talent. I can think offhand the openings that might fit that bill. I think the Las Vegas Raiders have pieces and are one of the most valuable franchises now in their new home in the league. They've got an owner, Mark Davis, who was the son of Al Davis, who wants to have a kind of a Showtime glitzy team, and he doesn't have that now. Their interim coach, Antonio Pierce, is just a blood guts defensive guy. But Rivera is not really the kind of high flying offensive coach that Davis wants. Although I think they've got some pieces. The Chargers have Herbert, the quarterback, who looks like a budding superstar, but under Staley, their coach, they just got rid of. They were just really a dysfunctional operation. So I think there's some pieces there as well. So maybe Rivera will get one of those opportunities and be able to run with that, because I think he deserves it. I don't think this Washington situation was a reflection on him at all. I think it's a new owner wanting to go a different direction.
No, and he reminds me a little bit of the way they coach, but you know, I look at a Brian Daboll, who of course was coach of the years just last year. Yeah. And you're looking at what he did with the Giants this year, and oh my gosh, this program was just looked like it was absolutely falling apart. And all of a sudden they get a big victory this past weekend, and he's on the uprise. You know, he's on coach's hot seat 3 weeks ago, and now all of a sudden it looks like his job is safe. So it's just really bizarre from week to week how it can change the Nashville Bully. And again, with Ron Rivera, another guy I think a lot of people actually root for. Let me ask you this before we let you fly too. This is the Kiefer and Curry Show. You can hear it, of course, at least 5 days a week on the TKR app and wherever you get your favorite podcasts. We're available on every major indice out there. Just look for Kiefer Curry or Tony Curry Radio Podcast. You know, it used to be you were Pop Warner, you were high school, you were college, and then of course you went to the pros, and that was the highest echelon, if you will, of coaching prowess when you're at least talking about football. I don't know how it works in other sports. Now it seems like the tables have been flipped a little bit. It seems a little bit more infamous now to be a head coach at a very successful college program as it does as a professional program. And again, if you're talking about a guy who's won a Super Bowl, and you would think that would be the highest echelon you could go at any coaching genre, if you will, then why would you want to go back to college? And if it's not for the money, I'm not sure it is. What is a better coaching job, I guess, is what I'm trying to ask you right now. Is it college at a good school, or is it professional football?
You know, you can't help but mention that the correlations now, that gap has closed, because what we're embarking on in 2024, and you and I talked about it a little bit on TV the other day, college football, as we know it, ended last night. That was the last game of the previous era, the decades of geographic-based conferences that we're aware of. Welcome, starting later this year, 2024, to professional college football, because that's what it's going to be. You're going to have two dominant conferences. The four teams that were in this year's playoff basically represented two leagues, because Texas is coming to the SEC and, of course, Washington to the Big Ten. So basically, you're going to have two super leagues. I'm changing the names officially. I mentioned this on TV the other day as well. Up north, you've got the Fox/CBS league, and down south, it's the ESPN ABC league. Television is driving the bus. It is completely the master of all things now. It's going to be involved in all the decisions on schedules, on when games are played, who plays who. It's going to be an NFL model in the playoffs, basically, with the first round buys and teams that are going to get in. The controversy in college is going to be that last group of rankings, because that's going to determine the teams that are going to eventually get in the playoffs, and the seedings too, which are always politically motivated. So my point is, college football and professional football are basically mirror images of each other, but there's amazingly, Tony, more stability in pro football now, because at least before a guy leaves your franchise as a free agent, he has to play out his contract. Not so in college football. Uh-uh. You can jump in the portal and transfer every year for, you know, 4 or 5 years to a different team. And so there, at least there's some structure to pro football now. I can't imagine being an NFL coach and having that business-like atmosphere to go and get into the three-ring circus now that's going to be college football until somebody steps up. And we talk about coaches needing to be effective leaders. There needs to be some kind of ruling bureaucracy that establishes some parameters for all of this Wild West nonsense that the indifference and incompetence of the NCAA and the individual universities have allowed to pop up like a unwanted, ugly mushroom in the middle of their fertile field. It is absolutely a blight on the situation. It's got to be addressed. So to answer your question, give me the NFL. At least there's some structure there. It's not just insanity.
What a lot of people don't realize is obviously the NCAA makes the majority of their money off of college basketball because they actually have ownership of that. The CFP is a different identity, than the actual NCAA itself. I was just trying to pull this up while we were talking. I was wondering what is worth more right now, the CFP or the National Football League? And I don't have that number. And I remember it being $3 billion, $4 billion, $9 billion, $13 billion, because when they were going through their last contract extension, they were trying to figure out how to open up this $13 billion piece of National Football League pie. And I was just wondering if there's actually a number on the CFP and what it's worth. And the reason I brought that up is you're talking about Jim Harbaugh, who made $11 million this year. Well, that's a nice chunk of pie. I'm not sure what Sean Payton was making when he signed with the Denver Broncos. Was it $10 million, $11 million? It used to be you had to be at the highest level of the National Football League to make that big time money. Well, now you can make that money in college, and you're not talking about 32 teams. You're talking about 132 teams that are all paying their coaches millions and millions of dollars. So obviously you're going to go where the money goes. So if it's about the money, is it more important to win a national championship in college football than it is a Super Bowl? I don't know. You'd have to ask someone that's done that. Maybe Jim Harbaugh will have an opportunity to do both. But that'd be a really interesting call to question. At what point? And I know a lot of guys will say, listen, you got to work your ass off when you're a college football coach. You really do.
Because
it's more than just a business.
You still have high school recruiting, which is a giant pain in the rear end.
Yeah.
That consumes so much of these guys' time. And there's a lot of coaches that get to the NFL level. So, I'm not going back. Todd Monken was the offensive coordinator at Georgia for 3 years and really kind of reversed the fortunes of the Bulldogs, who had Kirby Smart and Will Muschamp and Glenn Schumann, all defensive geniuses. Monken transformed Georgia into the powerhouse they are now. But after 3 years, and he even had a contract with Georgia, Tony, where he was not really called upon to do much recruiting at all because he finds it so distasteful. Yeah. But he still bolted back to the NFL, to the Baltimore Ravens, and look what they're doing. And I don't think you'll ever see a coach like Todd Monken go back to the really insanity that's college football right now. But you make a great point that the gap on compensation has closed. But I think you also, in a show we did a couple of months ago, said something that astounded me from your research, that of the top 35, the top 32 most watched sports events in the course of 2021, 28 of the 32 were National Football League presentations.
Yep.
So there's no question which league's more popular and more in the public eye. It's still the National Football League.
Yes, it is. We're going to talk some more college football, not to mention professional football, as we get ready for, of course, the wild card weekends, getting ready for Super Bowl 58 in Las Vegas. I'm assuming you're going to be out there to be catching that ball game with your son this year.
I'm on the fence. I don't have a secure seating assignment as of this point, but you never know how that stuff works out. I'll tell you, I've got a huge advantage because Yes, my son is a prominent journalist and covers the Raiders, but he's not really one that, you know, kind of steps up to the gravy train and expects any kind of Tony, he's a keeper, but he has ethics. I don't know how that happened. But my daughter-in-law is the real powerhouse in the family out there. She works for a company called Freshwater, which is one of the biggest event companies. She is coordinating so many different parties and celebrations and receptions and things. She is so involved in the Super Bowl, just like Case will be covering it. Tracy is actually helping put the event on in Las Vegas. So I've got some pretty good coverage there. That might work out, and it might come from an unexpected source.
Now, don't forget the little people. Now, don't forget your radio.
Oh, partner. Yeah. Hey, I'll tell you, if the dam breaks, we're going to have a hell of a time out there.
Well, it's going to be college football, professional football, and more. ABC 3340. We're on again this Saturday morning from 10:30 to 11 o'clock. We're going to be on every single Saturday. Outside college football, yes, we'll be talking college hoops. We'll be talking college sports, entertainment, and more. It's going to be Kip Kiefer and Tony Curry. We're going to have our regular staff of idiots. The Legends is going to be part of that. Terry Quinn will be on there for a rant. We're going to have all kinds of special guests throughout the fall, winter, spring, and then, of course, another summer. And college football season never ends on ABC 3340. So check us out again on Saturday mornings. Kip, until next week, brother. Thank you very much. I appreciate you.
Tony, great conversation. Enjoyed every minute.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.